This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Futuro.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, on the eve of President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration, we hear from Latinos and Latinas from across the country about the promises they want Biden to keep. Back in November, Latina and Latino voters helped deliver the presidency to Joe Biden. In key swing states like Georgia, and especially Arizona, Latinx voters helped turn former red states blue. And during the campaign, Biden made a long list of commitments to our communities.
On day one, I'm sending to the United States Congress an immigration bill.
We're going to find those kids, and we're going to unite them with their parents.
Reopening schools safely will be a national priority for the Biden-Harris administration.
We're going to reverse Trump's rollbacks of 100 public health and environmental rules.
Biden has said he'll invest in education and health care for Latinos. He said he'll stop border wall construction and that he'll work with Congress to create a path to citizenship for undocumented people. Biden also said he'll crack down on pollution in communities of color and reduce incarceration. So, in the lead up to the inauguration, Latino USA reached out to young Latinas and Latinos around the country to hear what promises they're hoping Biden will keep and what they want Biden to do that he hasn't committed to yet. Plus, we're going to speak with these young people about how the changes they want to see would actually impact their own lives. We're going to start this very non-comprehensive survey by speaking with Virginia Palacios. Virginia is a ninth-generation Tejana who grew up near Laredo, a city on the Texas-Mexico border.
We're in the South Texas brush country, so it's a lot of mesquite trees and prickly pear cactus.
Virginia is also an environmental science and policy consultant. Latino USA producer Alisa Escarce spoke with Virginia, and she's going to pick up this story from here.
Virginia lives in a rural area on a fourth-generation cattle ranch that's been in her family for close to 120 years.
We inherited it from my great-uncle, who was a grand champion calf roper during the Great Depression. He traveled the rodeo circuit with his brother. You know, they were fortunate enough to be born into families that had a lot of land, and so they were able to run cattle and support their families that way. And my dad was enamored with that history of cowboy culture.
He raised Virginia and her brother on the land. She remembers running around as a little kid and watching her dad move these huge cows from field to field. And she thinks growing up this way set the foundation for a love of nature that eventually led her to go to grad school to study climate change. And that's where she was when, in 2011...
he had to sell all the cattle on the ranch because the drought got particularly bad. And there was a national study that came out shortly after that drought showing that climate change made the heat waves longer and the temperatures more intense that year. And so we know that climate change has already been impacting us.
There had always been droughts in South Texas, though Virginia says they got worse and worse over time. It meant the grass wouldn't grow, which meant Virginia's dad had to start buying a lot of food to keep his cattle alive. So much so that he wasn't making money off his ranch anymore.
You know, it's kind of funny because I was always kind of hassling my dad. I was like, Dad, cows produce methane and methane is really bad for the climate. But when it came to the point where he had to sell them because he realized that the drought was so bad, it put things into a different perspective for me because I realized that he really didn't have a choice. I realized that we had kind of gotten to this point with climate change where it wasn't theoretical. It wasn't something far off in the future that could happen. It was happening now.
And it made the climate issues she was studying more personal.
When I think about my family's history out here and, you know, our Texan identity, it's sad, you know? It's sad to think that this cowboy culture is something that's been cherished for so long, you know, in Mexico, in Texas, as part of Tejano culture. And now it's dying off. And it's because of economic choices that we're making with the kinds of industries that we're supporting.
One of those industries is the oil and gas industry, which is huge in the area of South Texas where Virginia lives.
One of the more visceral things that we were seeing in the community was these open-top dump trucks holding this sludge waste that was coming from the oil fields. These open-top dump trucks would stop at this light just before the International Bridge on IH-35, and all this drilling waste sludge would go spilling out the back of the truck.
To Virginia, this was a sign that the government wasn't doing enough to keep an eye on what the industry was doing. And on top of the sludge, she noticed flaring, which are these balls of fire from burning excess gas off an oil well. She'd see the flaring as she drove down the highway. Virginia keeps tabs on what this stuff is doing to the air and the water in her hometown. And some of it is scary.
So there was a study that came out recently from some researchers at UCLA where they looked at birth outcome data in the Eagle Ford Shale, which is this part of South Texas that I live in. And they found that Hispanic women were 50% more likely to experience preterm birth because of living next to high amounts of flaring.
I mean, how does that make you feel as a Hispanic woman living in that area? Is that something that you worry about?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm in my 30s. If I chose to have a child in the near term, which is when I would have to have a child if I was going to, it's scary to think that the health outcomes of your child are out of your control.
Virginia wants to see Biden tackle both climate change and these air and water quality issues that affect public health in communities like hers. And both reducing greenhouse gas emissions and cleaning up pollution in Black and Latino communities are high on Biden's list of priorities. So how do you, I mean, as someone who tracks climate and environmental issues so closely, how do you feel at this moment that we're going through this transition in the government?
It feels pretty relieving to be going through this transition, knowing the damage that Trump did to the environment while he was in office. We won't see those kinds of policies in this new administration, but I think we have to stay vigilant in the environmental community for the kinds of compromises that will come through in this new administration.
What's lost if Biden isn't able to do something significant on climate in the region where you are?
Well, you know, it's crazy to think about, but if the river doesn't have enough water in it, if we have 40, 50, 90 more days per year with 100-degree heat, I can't imagine this community lasting 9 more generations down here. It might last a couple more generations down here, but people are going to move, you know? It's going to be a lot harder to exist down here if we let climate change get out of hand.
Coming up on Latino USA, we continue our conversations with young Latinx activists about what they want to see from the Biden administration. And we're going to hear from some of you, our listeners. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. And before the break, we heard from environmental advocate Virginia Palacios about the commitments she's hoping President Biden will keep on the issue of climate change and the environment. And now we're going to turn to immigration. We spoke with college freshman Andrea Anaya, who's from the Washington, D.C. area. Andrea is 19 years old. She's been undocumented since she came to the United States as a 5-year-old with her family. Here's Latino USA producer Alisa Escarce with Andrea's story.
You might have read about people like Andrea in the news a few weeks ago. She's eligible for DACA, but even though the program has been around for more than 8 years, she's only now applying for the first time. That's because, as you may know, the Trump administration tried to end DACA in 2017, and the program's been batted around the court system ever since then. Then, this past December, a judge ordered the administration to reinstate DACA and start taking new applications again. Andrea was born in El Salvador to a single mom.
My mom, she was in law school, actually, when she decided to come to the United States because she just couldn't afford to raise me on her own. And, you know, my entire family resided in Maryland. So at the age of 5, we came through plane to America.
They settled in Maryland. And some parts of Andrea's story might sound familiar if you've been following the Dreamer movement over the years. For example, she assimilated very quickly.
So much that, like, my family members tease me. Now they're like, you don't even remember your roots. You're like, you speak more English than Spanish. And it's true. I actually speak more English than Spanish now. Most of my memories and culture that I have is here.
One thing that makes Andrea a little unique, though, is that DACA already existed by the time she realized she was undocumented. She heard about the program before she was even old enough to apply.
You know, I would hear it's a great program for young people that had big dreams. And I was like, well, I have big dreams. You know, I've always been a very ambitious kid in a good way. For as long as I can remember, I set out a goal to be a senator. And I was like, I want to go to college. I want to go to law school. I want to be a politician. I want to make these laws. And maybe that kind of came off from my mom going to law school and having to drop out.
So she was waiting till her 15th birthday, which is when she'd be eligible to apply.
But when I got to my first year of high school, then the program basically kind of came to a stop, a sudden stop. And everything just kind of paused for me. I was like, whoa, I might not have a future.
What happened, of course, was that the Trump administration was trying to end DACA.
And I was just disappointed, sad, depressed, fell into a huge depression where I just didn't want to do anything. I didn't have motivation to continue school. I was a really good student. And all of a sudden, my grades dropped. And I kind of stopped caring because I was like, what's the point of this?
She figured that without DACA, she wouldn't be able to pay for college. She wouldn't be able to get a job.
And I felt just heartbroken. And at that moment, everything kind of changed for me, my goals, my personality. If it wasn't for my friends and teachers that found, you know, hope in me, I probably wouldn't have continued. So I had a lot of teachers around me that were like, you're a really good student. And I found a lot of trust in them to tell them the situation.
Eventually, Andrea pulled her grades back up, and she found new ways to stay motivated.
Although, you know, throughout my high school years, it seemed like nothing was going to change. There was this possibility, you know, that one day it might, because this president's only there for 4 years. And so I held on to that promise and to that hope.
Andrea ended up getting a full ride to Marymount University just outside D.C., and she's now working on her DACA application. But even now, DACA is still not a sure thing. The program is in court again, and a judge could rule that it's illegal.
So there's still a lot of, like, holding back emotions just because it's been a roller coaster these past 3 years, and you just never know.
So for months, Andrea put a ton of time into another strategy that she hoped would help her and other undocumented immigrants get a more permanent solution, which was to help get Joe Biden elected. She worked with the organization United We Dream to call thousands and thousands of voters leading up to the election.
You know, sometimes you get really happy voters. Sometimes you get people that are like, no, I hate immigrants. I literally want you sent back. So some days are better than others. For sure. It's a very draining job, I'd say, but it was completely worth it seeing the election results.
The reason Andrea made all those phone calls is because Biden promised on the campaign that he would work with Congress to protect Dreamers and their families, which honestly seemed like a long shot if the Democrats didn't win the Senate. But now, with the results of the runoff in Georgia, some longer term solution seems like more of a possibility.
So I'm hoping that it doesn't end with, okay, we won. We won the presidency and, you know, now it's over. You got to stick to your promises, you know, reinstall DACA. And not only that, but you're going to expand the program to hopefully give a pathway to citizenship, because DACA is not everything. I mean, it's a 2-year, you know, permit where you can work for 2 years, but you got to keep applying. And that's not a solution. That's not a way to live. And there's 11 million undocumented people in this country that have no solution. I mean, and I know them. I have family members, my mom, my uncles, my aunts, and it's not fair to them. They're in this country, they're working, and they want to be a part of this society, and they want to contribute. So we're going to continue pushing for a permanent solution, and they're going to continue hearing our voices. We're going to continue going to the steps of Congress, Supreme Court, whatever we have to do.
So overall, how are you feeling in this moment as there is this big change happening in our government?
I'm feeling hopeful. I think I see the light at the end of the tunnel, where we've had to endure these 4 years of bigotry and these racist rhetorics against immigrant communities, the damage that has been caused. It's a mental toll. No one talks about the mental health of immigrant communities. It's been impacted heavily. So in this moment, I see hope that we organized and we won. And if we continue organizing, we're going to continue to win. And sometimes, you know, good trouble. It's necessary.
And finally, we're going to talk about student debt with Jennifer Lesan. She's an adjunct professor of marketing, and she runs a small company that does graphic design and illustration. Plus, she's also a freelancer.
Technically, if we count them all, I have like 3 or 4 jobs at yeah. once. But I'm used to it.
Plus being a mom.
Plus being a mom, yes.
Jennifer lives in her hometown of Chicago, where she's the co-coordinator of the local chapter of the Debt Collective, which is a group that wants to cancel student debt. Here's Alisa Escarce with that story.
Jennifer is first generation a lot of things. She's first generation Mexican American on her dad's side and Puerto Rican American on her mom's. Plus, she's the first in her family to graduate from both high school and college.
I grew up in a single parent household. We were pretty much in poverty, but my mom really instilled us kind of rising above that. And she didn't even graduate high school because she was pregnant with me at 17. She had me at 18, so she dropped out. And because of that, she really believed that like pursuing higher education would kind of help break that cycle of poverty and trauma that our family experienced.
Jennifer says her mom saw college as a kind of magical thing.
But the thing was, she didn't have the money for it. She didn't have a college savings. We lived paycheck to paycheck.
Jennifer had to navigate the whole getting into college process by herself. And when a for-profit art school came to Jennifer's high school to recruit students, Jennifer thought that it seemed like a good idea. She was interested in a career in fashion.
I remember the day that I went for, like, the campus tour and everything. They, like, take you through the school. And mind you, this was in downtown Chicago. It was in a gorgeous building. You would think, like, oh, my God, these people have everything together. They were telling me all of these stats, like, oh, you have a 98 job placement rate. That was a lie. Or you're going to make $85,000 to $95,000 a year when you're done with, you know, with a career in this field. That was a lie.
The school that Jennifer went to, the Art Institute, shut down a couple years ago after the federal government accused it of fraud.
And then when it came to talking costs, here I am, this, you know, 18-year-old kid. I don't have a parent who knows squat about finance. What the heck is Sallie Mae? Who is a FAFSA? And so they're walking me through this, and I should have, like, I'm all about listening to your intuition now as an adult. But in my early 20s, I was a doe-eyed puppy, not knowing any better.
Jennifer ended up taking out about $75,000 or $80,000 in loans to cover that undergrad degree. And now, because of interest, that debt has grown to $90,000. Jennifer also had the bad luck of graduating in 2008, which was the year of the Great Recession. She had just had a baby.
I was able to have my, you know, like, I want to say maybe she was like 6 months old, my 6 month old kiddo on my hip while I'm walking in graduation. And I was really excited and hopeful, right? So I was really lucky right out of college. I landed like a job at a small business. And then 6 months into that first job, I got laid off because that's when the recession hit.
And her student loan payments started coming due.
I was getting hit with like a $1,000 payment. I was like, I got laid off. I have a kid. And you want how much from me? Like, I even think back then, I don't even think I was paying that much in rent. Like, they wanted something that was, like, more than, like, the apartment I was living in or the house that I was, like, sharing with a roommate and paying half for. And, like, it just blew my mind.
Jennifer started freelancing and working retail, which paid minimum wage. And she says that when she'd call her lender to try to get some relief,
these people would be like, well, get another job. And I'd be like, I already have another job. I was sad. I was angry. I was frustrated. I was depressed. Like, how am I ever going to pay this off? I feel like a failure. Like, if I think about it, like, my mom not going to school is better off financially than me pursuing higher education in hopes of getting a well-paid position.
Jennifer thought she might be able to dig herself out of this hole by going to grad school. So she took out another loan.
And then I loved teaching. So I was like, oh, I can become a professor. I can become tenured. Yeah, that doesn't happen anymore.
Altogether, Jennifer has $175,000 in debt. All of it is student loans.
But what's crazy is that my story isn't unique. There's a lot of people just like me, a lot of Latinas, a lot of Black women, a lot of people from the BIPOC community who carry this debt load no matter the school. Yes, I went to a for-profit school. They were fraudulent. They've been in the news. They were sued a million times. But there are people who've gone to places like Brown University or New York University. And because of their race, because of the background that they come from, they hold heavy loads of debt because they don't have generational wealth that allows them to pursue education on a level playing field with someone like, you know, a person in the white community.
So for the last couple years, Jennifer has been volunteering with this group called the Debt Collective that's advocating a pretty bold idea. They want to cancel everybody's student debt. Biden did address the issue of student debt during the campaign, but what he's committed to is a little less bold. He's basically said that he supports forgiving $10,000 of debt for each person with student loans, which would not make a huge dent in Jennifer's loan. Other Democrats in Congress have been pushing for a bigger number. They've introduced resolutions that push Biden to forgive up to $50,000 per person, but Jennifer isn't satisfied with that either. What is the number that you would want to see?
All of it, 100%.
This idea is a little controversial. Some critics say that forgiving the debt of somebody like a doctor or a lawyer who's making a high salary isn't a good way to spend taxpayer money. Though Jennifer says there are a lot of people like her who've ended up with these huge debts, but without a really lucrative degree.
What would you do if all of your student debt or if some of your student debt suddenly got canceled? Like, what would that do for you? I would cry. It's like, I know it's cheesy to say, but I would probably cry because we carry these burdens in silence often. And I have to be strong, right? And I feel like that would be lifting a part of that burden off of me, right? I carry this over in my head and I try not to let it get to me, but there is an emotional component. My hope isn't that it's only partial. My hope is that all of it's canceled. And then I can begin to build up that generational wealth for my kids and for their future. You know, we could buy a house with, you know, I could buy a house. I could start saving to buy a house.
In terms of the Biden inauguration specifically, like the fact of Biden getting inaugurated, how do you feel about that?
I feel hopeful, but I have a lot of, and I hate to have expectations of anyone, but honestly, I have high expectations of him. I think Biden owes everybody right now, and it's his opportunity to make amends. You know, we can't get our student debt discharged in bankruptcy court. Why? Because of policies that he implemented many, many years ago. So he's got to follow through. He has to.
To close out our episode today, dear listener, we asked you what changes you're hoping to see President Biden make over the next few months and years. Here are a few of your responses.
My name is Elena Solano, and my hope for Biden is that he tears down the damn wall. I think the wall is very, very destructive to Latinos on both sides of the border. I think it's very, very bad for mental health. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I'm also a school counselor, and I see the border wall as very destructive to the mental health and well-being of people on both sides of the border.
Hi, my name is Jaime Gonzalez. I'm calling from Chicago. I work as an immigration paralegal for the National Immigrant Justice Center, and my concern with the Biden administration moving forward is if the administration is going to decriminalize marijuana, it affects immigrants. For example, you know, if people are trying to get different forms of relief, their health different standards when it comes to weed, and there's a lot of places where weed has been decriminalized, you know, statewide, but just not at the federal level.
My name is Alex. I am a U.S. citizen, but my partner is an undocumented immigrant from Guatemala. And within his first 100 days in office, I'm really hoping to see a tangible, concrete, achievable plan for a pathway to citizenship for the 11 plus million undocumented immigrants that are already in the U.S. And within his 4 years in office, I would really like to see an end to the 3 and 10 year bars of reentry, which has personally been a huge obstacle to obtaining a legal status for my partner.
Education is also very important to me. I work in a very, very high need area in Detroit, and Latinos suffer a great deal in education. And I really hope Biden addresses the disparity in education between those who have and those who do not have.
Thanks to everyone who shared their hopes for the new administration. We'll be keeping an eye out for all of these issues over the next 4 years. This episode was produced by Elisa Escarce and Julia Rocha, with help from Reynaldo Leaños Jr. It was edited by Andrea López Cruzado. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Julieta Martinelli, Ginny Montalvo, and Alejandra Salazar, with help from Marta Martinez and Raul Perez. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw, with help from Alicia Baitu. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our interns are Samantha Friedman and Carly Rubin. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Ruinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ahí los veo. Hasta la próxima. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by Carnegie Corporation, promoting the advancement and diffusion of knowledge and understanding. The Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. Goya is popular in a lot of Latino kitchens, but after its CEO expressed support for former President Trump, there's a lot of questioning. But guess what? It's not the first, but the third boycott of Goya. That's next time on Latino USA.